It's time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. I know we have Cynthia Hosmer on the line. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning. There is actually a tree down on wires on Dugway Road, which is near Janet's house, and I just got here the second before the phone rang, so it's possible she doesn't have...
Well,
I'm on.
There she is.
Maybe she doesn't know it yet, but here she is.
There you go. Well, we could
bad
lose.
News, Janet. Take a left out of your drive. Joke.
I guess we could lose you at any time, Janet. But what the heck? We've got you now, so we'll just count on it.
Yeah, glad to be here.
All right. Well, let's go right to the Lakeville Journal, and actually, some pretty interesting stories developed this week when it's normally a pretty quiet time. First of all, the big story once again. COVID vaccinations, the new schedule set up by the governor, and also there's now a line where you can call and you can get people in Connecticut to schedule those appointments for you.
A lot of people were put off by the VAMS website and the registration process.
Yep.
And I think, Janet, you were saying that one of our former staff members had called up that number, and she got, I think she was... like 3 hours after they announced that her age group was allowed, she was already scheduled. So we're looking forward to Monday, which is the age 55 beginning, and you can't register online yet. They won't allow you to, but I'm thinking that probably if you keep checking over the next couple of days, at a certain point they'll start to let age 55. But I think, again, kudos to Governor Lamont for being as good with sharing information as anybody can be in a situation like this. But I think based on comments that people were making to me over the last couple of months, a lot of it was just nobody knew what the schedule was going to be. Like, when were they going to be allowed to register for their age group for the vaccine? So even if we're not exactly, like, to the minute able to stick to the schedule, I think people will be very happy to know more or less what the future is going to hold.
All right. Now, this is a story that normally wouldn't be a big story, but because Falls Village is so far away from convenience stores and from gas stations, the filling station at Route 7 and 63 has finally opened up, and that is a big convenience for people in Falls Village.
It's a big deal, especially because Falls Village doesn't really have any retail, and a lot of people either go to Torrington or go to Salisbury or go to Stop and Shop for their groceries, but no matter how you cut it, it's about a 20-minute drive to get milk. And
for gosh sakes, you have to drive 20 minutes to get gas.
Yeah.
Right. And, people just traveling on Route 7 or Route 63 who are unfamiliar with the area can't believe how far they had to go where they couldn't get gas. They would stop at our office and say, where's the closest gas station? We saw this place, but it's closed.
You've got to go to Canaan or you've got to go to Cornwall.
Well, not anymore.
Yay.
Not anymore.
And sandwiches. And, it's a funny little photo portrait that Patra took of the new owner, but, gosh, doesn't he look happy? And, who can blame him? It was a long, bumpy road to get that gas station open. There were a lot of problems with, with the soil and with red tape, and they're finally open, and let's all support them.
A pretty important story that has been, I've heard rumblings around here. We're going to be speaking with Mark Herko, I do believe, on Friday. But there have been several people that have contacted us concerned about changes at the Sharon Hospital, not in the hospital itself, but the setup of the board.
And the board is being very laid back about, this is just a nominal change. Rick Cantelli from Salisbury Bank and Trust, who is generally a pretty straightforward guy, says in this article written by Patrick Sullivan, it's nothing to worry about. It's very straightforward. But if you just look at it, it does seem like a big change to go from, I think it's 12 members to one member. I think it's really good that people are keeping an eye on the hospital. There have been a lot of changes since New Vance took over. I think generally people have been pleased with it. I think generally people like Dr. Herko and feel like he, again, a very straightforward person. But always good to keep an eye on these things.
And the story about the trash and residents, full-time residents, we are here in the northwest corner are facing a convergence of events that it's going to make disposing our trash very expensive. It's more people, more trash, and there's no place now really to take the trash. They're going to have to find a new place in the state, which is going to rise costs as well.
Really interesting pair of stories from Leela Hawken from Cornwall, which is the first, I think they're the farthest along in their budget process of any of our six towns, I believe, and had a long and detailed conversation about how trash disposal is impacting the town budget plan for the coming year. And very specific numbers from their transfer station, where there's basically two guys working full-time, and they're only open a couple days a week. And they've gone from, I think they've quadrupled the amount of cardboard that they're processing every week, and roughly about the same amount of garbage, and, you know, still the same guys, so four times as much work, two same people. And the cost to the towns to dispose of all of that, and, you know, because more people are living up here full-time because of COVID, and also because everybody's ordering so much more of their product online, so there's all this cardboard and packaging that everybody's dealing with. So they're trying to figure out ways in Cornwall, which takes pride in the fact that it's got such a high recycle rate and is a very clean, green town, trying to figure out ways to cope with this. And I think that we're going to see this in all of our towns because, Marshall, as you said, it's not just the increased pressure on our transfer stations, but we've been seeing this sort of rolling up toward us for the last 5 years or so as recycling has become more complex, as China has refused to take a lot more of our trash. And I think as more and more of us, you know, use more plastic and use more plastic bottles and, you know, buy more stuff.
I saw a story in the national news about how in the cities and the poorer communities with COVID-19, the way that they were trying to fix their ventilation of the classrooms was to put these small things that you buy at your home, the fans, and put fans in the window that brought air in and brought air out, which really does not work well at all. But we here in Region 1 have put a lot of effort into actually circulating the air at the high school, and I think we're doing it the proper way.
Right, and they got a $1 million grant at the high school to get these air exchangers in. They, as of February 17th, they were delayed for a week, so probably they're there already. But, I can't think how many people I've had dinner with over the last year who said, I can't really come over unless you've got some kind of air circulation in the room. And I guess that's the same question with airplanes, is the air circulation good enough? But good to see that they're thinking on their feet there and trying to keep our students safe.
It's one thing we have here at the radio station that was put in back in 1986 when all the renovations were done here. There is an air handler that is separate that continues the flow of outside air inside and then back outside. That was done back in 1986, and that's the type of system that you're talking about, with this, where it's the natural flow of air. And I think it's going to be one of the more important things in our schools in the area to get the schools back to operation as quick as possible.
Well, and even in a post-COVID world, most new buildings that are built so tight that there's no natural airflow, and a lot of the products that we're using are chemically treated in one way or another. So there's a lot more toxic air in our homes. So an air handler like you guys have in your building is really a great innovation.
All right. You know, I love historic pictures, and I love the picture of the toll bridge of the high water, and then the story by Patrick Sullivan, really with Bernie Drew, about electric power in our region.
I was going to say, it's a Patrick Sullivan story, but really it's a Bernie Drew story. Yeah. And Bernie, of course, beloved longtime Lakeside Journal staff member, but also a beloved local historian. And, you know, as we've lost a lot of our really big names in local history with Ed Kirby and Ron Jones, we really have to treasure people like Dick Paddock and Bernie Drew, who are still here doing all this interesting work and also carrying around all this information in their heads that they've often found, you know, through first-person research, digging through records, which is how Bernie does a lot of his research. So talking, you know, and of course, it's just an interesting story that Bernie made very lively, which is the choice between AC power and DC power. And as you said, a great photo of the bridge that used to be in North Canaan. Really, the water is really washing right over that bridge.
It's one of those pictures that you look at, and then you say, and then you look at the area now and how it's changed and how everything's changed. It's one of those stark things that time marches on, and you have to appreciate the past, I guess, to appreciate the future as well.
Right, and also as we hear what's going on in Texas and the complexity of their power system, and you know, in our power system, we're part of the New England ISO, and so if we ever have a power situation, we can even get, you know, electricity from Canada. But interesting, you know, and of course our power in Connecticut has been deregulated, so a lot of the issues that are impacting Texas have impacted us in the past, but so far we've done pretty well.
Well, don't you remember we had that snowstorm where the entire state was without power, for a week for most of the state, but they got like probably about 50% of the state back up within a day or two because of being on that power grid. And when you go back to the story about Texas, they were literally minutes away from losing the power grid, which would have taken months to restore. People sometimes take the power grid for granted, especially if you're not associated and being tied in on the national grid. I want to move on to a couple of stories on page A3. First of all, interesting story with the headline, businesses are thriving, but ash trees are dying.
Some people keep saying to me, like, I saw a lot of clear cutting going on. And I think last year especially there was a lot, like you drive down the road and there would just be a ton of trees being taken down and being mulched, or you'd often see guys in pickup trucks on the side of the road cutting it up and taking it home and splitting it. So ash, which burns really nicely, has been devastated by the emerald ash borer, which for years they worked very hard to try and keep it out of the region. But the ash borer destroys, it plants its larvae underneath the bark, which is already bad for the tree. But then the woodpeckers come along, and there have been a lot of woodpeckers out. We have a nice one, a photo of one in an evergreen tree in this week's paper. But the woodpeckers come in, and they dig in through the bark of the tree to get the larvae. And so the combination of that is the trees die. So we've had a massive die-off of ash trees. I believe there was just a big ash tree clear-cutting up in North Canaan about a couple weeks ago. So North Canaan Board of Selectmen talking about these ash trees that are dying. And, of course, North Canaan, unexpectedly, is one of the most environmentally aware towns. Like a lot of really knowledgeable people, Tom Zetterstrom and Christian Allen, thinking about the trees and thinking about how to protect them. But on the other hand, North Canaan businesses in the center of town have been doing better than they've done in decades. So you've got all sorts of interesting, very forward-thinking businesses. There's the new Berkshire Country Cafe, and there's a juice and coffee bar coming up. A lot of interesting gut stuff going on, not just antique stores.
And to show you how expensive it is to run a town, we all know that when our ambulance services have to replace their ambulances, they're in up in the range of $100,000 to $200,000, if not more. Well, in Sharon, once again, just for a loader, I mean, you're looking at $140,000 to $150,000.
Yeah, and a lot of times the towns are buying secondhand.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, you know, you always feel like, you know, everybody's going to want like a Ford or something really straightforward. Every meeting I've ever been to, they really do like these sort of exotic brands, or exotic to me. So in Sharon, they love the Volvo equipment, and they have the majority of their town's equipment is Volvo. And as anybody knows who's had a fleet of anything, it's always good when you can swap parts and share fluids on it. But these stories seem very minor to people, I think, when they read the paper, but
they're not
it definitely impacts your life and your taxes, so important to pay attention.
And to go along with the trash story in Cornwall, the changes of COVID-19, their impact in Cornwall.
Right. Again, very detailed explanation from Lila. And, you know, essentially two stories that mirror each other, but really very interesting to all of our towns, and I think we're going to be hearing more and more of that. And, you know, Salisbury already is one of the least expensive towns, Salisbury and Sharon, to get a transfer station. Kent already, one of the bigger towns in the area, has already had a much, much more expensive transfer station fees and much less access to their transfer station. So it'll be interesting to see how we all cope in the coming weeks, I mean, in the coming years. I mean, I'm wondering if we're going to move more toward a regional trash disposal system.
Lots of obituaries and appreciation obituaries, but one that caught my eye was Shirley Shofet. Of course, she moved to Houston with her husband. Jake passed away years ago, and she just passed away. But that's one of those names that's associated with this area and brings back lots of great memories from both Jake and Shirley.
Right, and her obituary really describes beautifully so many of the things she took part in this area, you know, in partnership with Jake, but on her own as well. Yeah. What a fascinating lady.
And nice, a nice letter of appreciation by Steve Blass on Ed Kirby.
Yeah, wonderful. Tom Shackman writing about Ron Jones as well. Lots of interesting people in this week. Very sad to lose everybody.
Now, Patrick Sullivan has that has the story on tributes on Canvas to Native American life.
This is another one of those things where Zoom allows you to have access to these talks from all over the country. So as a docent from the Smithsonian, and weirdly, I actually have a print of that exact painting, which is now sitting on my dining room table, and I feel like I better put it up. But a really interesting talk about George Catlin, who was a person who grew up in the American West. His family was kidnapped by the Indians, the Native Americans, managed to come back into their family safely, but built a lifelong fascination with Native American culture in this painter who did these wonderful prints and paintings, which I actually have a full set of in my basement. And, you know, how interesting that that COVID has allowed me to sort of remember this interesting thing in my own basement that I should probably pay more attention to.
Now, of course, this is National FFA Week, and Housatonic Valley Regional High School participates in that. We interviewed the president of the Ag Science FFA at the Housatonic Valley Regional High School yesterday, and she gave us a nice insight onto the things that people don't realize what goes on with the FFA section of Housatonic Valley Regional High School, and what a respected FFA we have. It's always mentioned when you mention anywhere in our tri-state region as being one of the best in within 100, 150 mile radius.
And a draw for tuition paying students.
Yeah, she's a great asset to the faculty there at Housie, and she worked with the kids to put together this article. It's written by FFA staff, and so much support for this program in the general area. Please do take a look at the advertisers in this section and support them the way they support FFA.
Now, I want to go to the opinion page, because you do have the letter in the opinion page from the new general manager at WSHU. But along with that, you have a great editorial talking about local media needs support. I mean, Dennis Jackson started a radio station here that I was involved with, and then ended up leasing it to WSHU simply because it was not really, really flourishing as it needed to do here. And then SHU has found out that, once again, the financial support was not enough to keep it in our area. And Janet and I were talking on the phone after all this came up. Really, if anything, is a slap in the face to people to wake them up, that if you want local media, you just can't keep expecting to get it for free.
Exactly. And it really was surprising to many people, perhaps even to Dennis Jackson and WSHU, how many people in this area still felt that WQQQ was part of their community and, you know, their radio station. And they really have responded in a big way to no longer having their regular programming on there. Well, they should have expressed themselves with contributions before this. For 9 years, QQQ was associated with WSHU down in Fairfield, Connecticut, and they had to look at it. Do read Rima Dale's letter explaining their background and their finances. They had to look at it very carefully, and especially during COVID, all businesses, but especially media, need to look at what they're doing and cut back in different ways, and this is how they were able to do it and remain relatively intact for their primary listenership.
And what people have to realize is not only did they cut their transmission on WQQQ, but they had three other stations that they had the same agreement with, that they did the same thing, because they had to make up a shortfall of millions of dollars, and these three stations obviously were part of that. People just have to understand, it's like when people complain about a paywall for a newspaper. Us here, we rely on grants, donations, and underwriting. We don't exist on an unlimited amount of money. We need that the support, not only of people using our services, but saying, you know what, we have to support it in whatever way possible.
Right, and we did talk about this, Marshall, and still I am not sure if people sort of think, well, it's kind of free, right? It's radio waves, it's free. but it's not free to produce. And if people are accustomed to looking at online news and thinking, well, I get that for free, you know, in some instances on Facebook, et cetera, that are aggregated. It's not free. Somebody had to put that together, and that somebody has to eat and pay their taxes and rent. So, you know, we need support in order to exist, and this is a good example of that. We do a little reminiscing about what WQQQ was when Joe Lavero and Marie Castagna were there as the on-air personalities, and it's hard to believe it was 9 years ago, and it's good that Joe is in upstate New York still on air, and, you know, Marie is still in our community, very active, but time for a change, and this explains why.
All right, lots of letters from SWASA to housing, And also to I love the story, the letter about Mises because of the story you did on pizza.
Exactly. You know, and this, what's more personal than pizza? We know that. And so Jim Charlton from Lakeville asked us why Mises Pizza wasn't represented in the story about that Deb Alexinis wrote about whether pizza should become Connecticut state food. So we had we rarely do editor's notes, but we did for Jim and for Mises and for Eddie, and we say we made multiple attempts to contact the owner at, by phone and in person at the restaurant to no avail. So we are asking him here, Eddie, do you think pizza should be the state food of Connecticut? By all means, get back to us.
All right, and of course, you've a letter from Michael Clemens about nonprofits not immune to criticism. I can tell you we know that. Social
right.
justice and education for a white community, by, another great letter.
Yeah, we really, it's such an array of opinion this week, so we're grateful for it. It's interesting that Craig Tunsing also comes up with a opinion that Lakeville Lake is not the deepest lake in Connecticut, and he makes the argument that it's Lake Saltonstall. So anyone who has a differing opinion, by all means, chime in.
All right, and I love the cartoon, Ted Cruz, Not So Proud Boy. I'll just leave it at that so people can find out themselves.
That's right. You really have to look at it. And don't miss Lisa Wright's column, A Critical Human Right. She's talking about reusing things and recycling them. So really interesting. She's going to do a little series on this for us.
All right, and Cynthia, the compass is right there in front of us as well.
A smaller compass this week so we could have space for our excellent FFA. And by the way, people often say to me, like, well, what does FFA stand for? And they explain it in that very excellent short article and why it really is not okay to call it Future Farmers of America anymore.
Yeah.
But Peter Kaufman, an author from Lakeville, a very interesting guy, but also the father of one of our most beloved summer interns, Sophia Kaufman, who came back to us for many years and took a beautiful portrait of her dad. Peter, very interesting, thoughtful guy, has a new book about truthiness and the media and this sort of this 21st century idea of the truth is what you make it. Interview by Fred Baumgarten, also a very interesting guy, and a deep, interesting conversation, the kind that you wish you could be sitting at the dinner table and listening to, and here's your chance. And, of course, Peter will be talking about his book and on March 13th, which I'm happy to say is coming up pretty soon as we race through the end of winter into summer. And then Lila Hawken, speaking of spring and summer and new plants, Bosco Shell and Paige Dickey, who live here in Falls Village right around the corner from our office. Paige Dickey, a famous garden writer, and her husband, a famous book and magazine editor, talking about their greenhouse. And how many of us are not daydreaming at this time of having a little wonderful greenhouse?
You know, the story about the FFA, interviewing yesterday, interesting thing, when I was in high school, FFA was all about farming, okay?
Yep.
But then about 15, 20 years ago, FFA became about agribusiness, which was a whole different aspect of it. And now it's not only agribusiness, it's agri-science. And the great thing that people don't realize, our local chapter has kept up with all those changes and adapted over the years. So they are right there on the firing line. It really is an amazing chapter.
It really is. They've been leaders in this movement. They're great.
All right, well, those are some of the stories you'll find in the Lakeville Journal of this week. TriCornerNews.com is the website, of course, home delivery and at newsstands throughout the region. We'll speak to you guys next week.
Right, and
thank you so much.
TriCorner Real Estate this week. It's in the paper.
All right. That is this week in the Lakeville Journal here on Robinhood Radio. And once again, TriCornerNews.com is where you will find them.